This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and welcome along. Tonight you're with Mark, and welcome back to Claudine.
Hello, thank you. It's a bit of a revolving door. We're missing Rachel this week, but I'm back.
Well, you know, one in, one out at the moment, it seems a little bit, but anyhow.
We'll get the whole gang back together some stage, maybe.
We'll see how we go. So welcome back, and welcome to tonight's show. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about a festival that's happening this week, in a holiday of the week, and we're also going to talk about NAIDOC week, which of course has been happening all week and is an important part of the Australian landscape these days. So we don't have the theme song for holiday. Do you want to sing, Claudine?
No, I'm not going to sing. No,
really?
We really don't want to do that.
And look, from somebody who wasn't allowed in the massed choir at secondary school, I don't think it's a good idea that I sing. So we will go straight into our holiday of the week without anything. Hopefully when Rachel comes back, she can sing for everybody. So the greeting that we should say, now I'm going to probably mispronounce this, but let's have a go. Eid Mubarak. So it's
Eid Mubarak? Maybe?
Maybe. Let's go with it.
Picking it up.
So it's the festival of Eid al-Fitr. So it celebrates the end of Ramadan. That's what we're celebrating. So Ramadan has been going on for 29 or 30 days. I'm not sure which one it is this year. It does vary a little bit, which is an Islamic festival. So at the end of Ramadan, we have this festival called Eid al-Fitr, which celebrates the end. It's a day of feasting. So there's one big thing that you need to do today, and that's, or not today, during this festival.
Yesterday? I think it was yesterday.
Yeah. But it does go from 1 to 3 days, depending on where you are and to which particular tradition you follow. Yeah, but the big thing is that you're forbidden to eat. So it's a day of eating. So for those of you who may not know what Ramadan is about, Ramadan is the 9th month of the Islamic calendar. And it's the month in which Muslims believe that the Quran was revealed through the Prophet Muhammad. So for that period of time, Muslim people fast from dawn to sunset. So during the day they don't eat, which is a big ask.
I don't think they even drink water. I think that's allowed.
I'm not sure. We will need to find that out.
Well, I had Muslim people in the office, and that's what they were saying. No, not even a drink of water.
That's right. You're right. So it says, whilst fasting from dawn to sunset, Muslims refrain from consuming food, drinking liquids, smoking, and engaging in sexual relations. The idea is to refrain from any sinful behaviour that may negate the reward of fasting. So you're not allowed to curse anybody or be insult people or fight. And food and drink, so the practice is that you would eat before dawn and then after dawn. Now, a lot of people who live in Melbourne would know along Sydney Road, apparently it's quite something to go out during Ramadan just after dark. Lots of people out there eating lots of good food.
It's quite a celebration, I think, the iftar, the breaking of the fast in the evening. It's something that, it's a community thing that you all get together and eat, even more so than usual. It's like celebrating the breaking of the fast together.
Which sounds really lovely, especially given it's not something that you just do once. It has lots of things, so it gathers the community, which is always nice to have. So Eid al-Fitr is the end of Ramadan. So it's the day where you have day or up to 3 days, depending on where you are, where you would come together as a group and have a big meal. And it depends where you are. There's lots of different customs. I've had a look on the internet. In some countries, in the run-up to this festival, it's a lot of shopkeepers will give gifts with purchase as part of getting ready for the celebration. Certainly charity is part of the celebration. So there's a practice of giving, of performing charity, giving to the poor before the prayers are recited for Eid al-Fitr. So it seems like a bit of an all-round feast and festival. Now, according to the internet, this Sunday there will be a big celebration in Broadmeadows. Don't know much else about it, but it was mentioned that seems to be where the Islamic community gathers to celebrate this great festival. So that's been our holy day of the week. It's certainly a great way to sort of start talking about, because we're going to talk about NAIDOC week in a little bit, but which is also about community. It's nice to have these festivals which are all about community and being part of community, which is something we have in the gay community in terms of having, you know, our Midsummer Festival is obviously a good example of where we gather as a community, and there's a couple of big days that sort of gather that. So in a secular sense, but also it mirrors what happens in a spiritual sense.
And in a way, it's nice to, we'll be talking about the sort of oldest communities in this country, but it's nice to also start off talking about some of the newer communities that have formed in Australia and are bringing the their own Australian flavour to Islam and Islamic practices. I mean, for other unrelated reasons, I was going down one of the internet rabbit trails this week and learning about the halal snack pack, which I had never known about because it's primarily made out of meat and I'm not a meat eater, but hearing it's I think it's basically meat and cheese and potato chips, which is I guess an Australian approach to Muslim food or in strongly Muslim communities, but it's I was reading that it's not something you would come across in Turkey or Saudi Arabia. It's a uniquely Australian approach to halal food.
We must be going down the same internet rabbit warren, because I have to admit I read the same thing too, not having a lot of contact with the Islamic community. It was really interesting to read about it. It seems to be a practice that's in terms of supporting the Muslim community by partaking in food that is a halal, but it's also it's a bit of a local custom. And the other, I was also, as one does on the internet, going down little rabbit warrens this week, but I was reading an interesting article and it was talking about how long Muslims have been in Australia. Now, I can't remember the exact date, but the first mosque was built in South Australia in something like 1860 or something, like very, very early on. Because, of course, one of the first large groups of Muslims to come were the Afghan traders. Mm. And so we have the rail line is still called the Ghan in memory of those people. And certainly it's really interesting to go to I visited Broken Hill some couple of years ago, and there's a very large Muslim part, a very old and very large Muslim part of the Broken Hill Cemetery, which is captures that history of how long Muslim and Islamic people have been in Australia and part of Australian life. So and that's where camels come from.
And you may have seen around Melbourne some of these posters about I think it is and one of these Afghan camel traders with the word Aussie under his name, and it really makes you think about how Muslim people have been in Australia a lot longer than people realize. So it's I think that's been a good awareness raising exercise. So it's been controversial, of course, but sadly, as we were saying earlier, that a lot of things involving Muslims are controversial for the wrong reasons these days in Australia. But it's at this time of year we should just be saying welcome and wishing Eid Mubarak to our Muslim friends.
Absolutely.
And as we've said, it's No Doubt Week this week, and that was the song Koori Woman by Tidus, which is a Koori word meaning sisters. Tidus was a three-piece group active in the 1990s, comprising Amy Saunders, Lou Bennett and Sally Desty, all Koori women from Victoria who've had their own musical careers, but they were active for only a decade, I think released three albums in that time and have, as I said, had their own careers as well outside of that.
Excellent. So it is NAIDOC Week and you're on the Spirit Lounge. So we're going to talk about, I was saying to Claudine, you know, I've been celebrating NAIDOC Week for a long time, primarily in my professional life. But I said to Claudine, I actually don't know. I was really embarrassed. I was thinking about it. I don't know what NAIDOC stands for. And I was thinking, this is really kind of embarrassing when, you know, I've been to lots of different things and really enjoyed it, but actually don't know what it stands for.
So nobody actually says, this is NAIDOC Week and this is what it stands for.
Well, usually it's more focused on what the theme of NAIDOC Week is about, and, you know, it might depend on who sometimes we have guest people coming in to talk to us as a group, or depending on what it is. So we're more focused on the individual or what the actual activity is, rather than actually what NAIDOC Week is about. So it's probably a good place to start about what is NAIDOC Week? What does NAIDOC stand for? I knew it was an acronym, but I didn't even know what it stands for. So the acronym is,
National Aborigines and Islanders Day Observance Committee. You can sort of see why nobody really remembers. It's a bit of a heavy title.
It is a heavy title, and it's a committee. It's just the name of the committee.
Yeah, and I think it was a committee, and for some reason it's become, they've always had this week of celebration since I think the 1920s, and then that's become the name of the week has eclipsed the memory of the committee, I suppose. But I'm sure there still is a NAIDOC or a NAIDOC Week committee, which.
There is a NAIDOC, yes, you're right. Yep. There is definitely still a NAIDOC. Yeah, so because I always thought it must have been an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander word. I just assumed that it was, not thinking that...
It's actually an acronym.
It's actually an acronym. So that's what NAIDOC Week... That's what NAIDOC stands for. So as we said, NAIDOC is a week to celebrate Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture.
And it has a different theme every year?
It does have a different theme every year. And this year's theme is Songlines, the Living Narrative of Our Nation. So I'll read a little bit of the spiel that's come off the NAIDOC website. It's always good to go to the source to talk about what it is. So as we said, Songlines, the Living Narrative of Our Nation. So for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, the Dreamtime describes a time when the earth, people and animals were created by our ancestral spiritual beings. They created the rivers, lakes, plants, land formations and living creatures. Dreaming tracks crisscross Australia and trace the journeys of our ancestral spirits as they created the land, animals and laws. These dreaming tracks are sometimes called songlines, as they record the travels of these ancestral spirits who sung the land into life. These songlines are recorded in traditional songs, stories, dance and art and carry significant spiritual and cultural connection to knowledge, customs, ceremony and law of many Aboriginal nations and Torres Strait Islander groups. So that's where it's sort of coming from, is about this understanding of songlines, which is something that if you're not part of the Aboriginal community, you probably would be like, oh, is that about a song? Well, the song has a connection back to the spirituality of Aboriginal nations and Aboriginal people, but it also connects into the land. It's very, like a lot of religions, it's very much connected back to the cycle of the earth, which is very intrinsic to all our lives when we live on earth. So it's part of our life. So looking at, you know, how songlines, a little bit more about what they say about it, they talk about songlines as being maps of the land, the sea and the country, describing how travel and trade routes, locations of waterholes, the presence of food. And then there's this part that I thought was really lovely. It says, songlines on Earth are mirrored by sky songlines, which allowed people to navigate the vast distances of this nation and its waters. So it's it's mirrored across, so it connects the sky, if you like, or the other with the earth. So it's that very much that connection, which I find really quite a strong sort of, it resonates with me quite well. So the extensive network of songlines can vary in length from a few kilometres to hundreds of kilometres, crossing through traditional country of many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander language groups. For example, the Seven Sisters songline covers more than half the width of the continent, from deep in the central desert out to the west coast, while others connect the Gulf of Carpentaria with the snowy rivers near mountains, near Canberra, rather. So it's about connecting country and tribal groups. And, you know, as Rachel and I did last week, and we did an acknowledgement of country, because where the Joy Studios are located, that's on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And so that's the traditional lands that were the people who lived in what is now Melbourne's CBD. It's actually far greater than just Melbourne's CBD. You know, the traditional nations go for quite some time, it's quite some distance. But it's also, I think that picks up that when we talk about an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, it's not a homogenous culture. It's very much about different groups and similarities between groups that are close to each other. But if you took a tribal group from far north Queensland and, say, compared it to the practice of say, the Gunditjmara people, which are based down near Warrnambool, it's quite a different culture. It's part of one. There will be connectedness and there'll be similarities, but they're quite distinctly different given their distance.
Aren't there, you know, hundreds of language groups on this continent?
There is hundreds of language groups. It's really interesting. I have a poster on my wall at work that talks about it's actually talking about the nations of Aboriginal Australia, and then it groups it into different areas, and it's quite a colourful map of Australia, because it's quite a lot, and you're, even though it's sort of mapped out and looks all very neat, people who know a lot more than me tell me that that's sort of a representation, but there were certainly crossover points and boundaries moved obviously over time, but just depending on how the two groups were interacting with each other. So it's quite interesting. So going back to the NAIDOC theme for this year, which is Songlines, the Living Narrative of Our Nation, it goes on to talk about Torres Strait Islander group people who are distinct to Aboriginal people. So it says, through songs, art and dance and ceremony, Torres Strait Islanders also maintain creation stories which celebrate their connection to land and sea. Songlines have been passed down for thousands of years and are central to the existence of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. They are imperative to the preservation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultural practices. And so the theme is inviting Australians, all of us, as one large group of people, which is certainly not homogenous by any stretch of the imagination, to learn a little bit more about the Indigenous culture of Australia and their traditions and folklore and all that sort of stuff, so that we understand much more about this nation that we all coexist in.
And we'll certainly be doing that tonight with some of the songs that we're playing tonight. So we're talking about NAIDOC Week on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And if you'd like to join the conversation, do send us a text on 0427 Joy 949. Email us onair@joy.org.au, or if you've got the smartphone app, just use the contact button there. You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, where we're talking about NAIDOC Week and some of the Indigenous spirituality and experiences. And we just heard Archie Roach with Down City Streets. And Archie Roach was a Victorian Indigenous man born in Murupna in northern Victoria. And he was removed from his family as a young child, and his songs such as Down City Streets and Took the Children Away describe some of those experiences as a member of the Stolen Generations. So in the last segment, we were talking about this year's NAIDOC Week theme of songlines and about traditional Indigenous stories and spirituality. But I guess the other side of that is, you know, in the last 200 and so years, since the arrival of most primarily white people, and with it Christianity, that's as we all know, I think has been a huge disruption and really turning the world of Indigenous Australians upside down. And that's something that on the Spirit Lounge, as non-Indigenous people who represent some of these other religions, that's something that as non-Indigenous people living in Australia is something that we need to look at seriously and thinking about how we relate to this history of whether we call it invasion or dispossession.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it plays out in the more modern society. So as a young adult, I was friends with an Aboriginal guy who sadly passed away. And so his funeral was one of these places where you could see that real clash of colonisation as opposed to Indigenous culture. So
where was it?
He grew up down in the southwest of Victoria, but his family were, his traditional family, or his Aboriginal family rather is a better term, were forcibly moved from Broome in Western Australia and put on one of the missions, the Framlingham mission down in the southwest of Victoria. So his father had married a non-Indigenous woman. So his funeral, which was really sad for lots of other reasons, being such a young person, but was a real cultural clash. And you could really feel the tension. So he had a very traditional Roman Catholic funeral, which was quite, even by Roman Catholic standards, it was very traditional. And then we walked to the local cemetery, which, as you do in that part of the world, and they did a Roman Catholic burial rite. And then all the women were asked to leave the cemetery grounds, the entire grounds. So we stood and waited till everyone had literally left the grounds. And then it was men's business. And it was a traditional Aboriginal burial, which was men's business. So it was really interesting. And that caused some rupture. There were some people who were found that quite confronting. And it was really, it was a difficult, because you could see how his paternal family really wanted to honour this young person and honour him he would have become an elder of his traditional community, of his Aboriginal community, given his father was, but sadly died very young. So it was really interesting to see how the two didn't really gel together very well. It was a really interesting, as a young person myself and quite an experience, it's really left a lasting impression. And it was, like, to me, it was a great honour to be part of men's business. It was really quite something that's really burnt into my memory. So, yeah.
So the, it's something that we, you know, some of us who grew up in Australia will have learned in school to varying extent about the history of Indigenous Australians and conflicts with white settlers and the role that religion and churches and missionaries have had in that, and I think there's what you've described is one of the is one example of the many ways that this the sort of coexistence, or maybe coexistence is not always the right word, of traditional and I guess imported spirituality in families and in Indigenous communities. And there's, as somebody who's been part of a church for a long time and who's got a lot of got a lot of friends in the Uniting Church, I've been watching with interest how that church has been saying a lot of things and trying to sort out its history. It's of course the Presbyterian and Methodist churches were very involved in Christian missions and in some of the institutions that, along with Anglican and Catholic churches, that were involved in the Stolen Generations, and looking at how theologians in the church now are trying to deal with that on behalf of the churches, but also what's looking at the role of Indigenous people within the church and those who have, whether they've come through it through missionaries or otherwise, those indigenous people who choose to identify as Christian, how they deal with this, having these different cultures side by side. So I thought we'd play an excerpt from this year's Easter message, which was given by the leader of the Uniting Church in Australia, Stuart McMillan, who shared this with an Indigenous minister, and that's certainly part of the dialogue that, and the conversation that the Uniting Church is having at this time. So this is part of Stuart McMillan's in 2016 Easter message.
This year, I'm speaking to you from Ikara, known to most Australians as Wilpena Pound in the Flinders Ranges National Park of South Australia. I'm on the road with Uniting Church Minister, the Reverend Denise Champion, an Ardnamata woman, the first Aboriginal woman ordained as a minister in South Australia. There are others with us on the journey as Denise shares stories of this, her country. Somehow Jesus is present with us as we walk and break bread together. I rejoice, for in the presence of my companions on the road, Jesus has been present for us all. As part of this Easter message, I'd like to ask Denise, my sister, to give a welcome to you to her country and a story of renewed hope.
Nunga, hello. My dad used to say, I'm going on a journey back in my mind. My mum would always ask the question, Wenangenei, where are you going? Then Dad would begin to tell a story of journeying back home to his home country and back in time. Our ancestors' stories were passed on, stories of hope, of learning to live in peace and harmony with one another, and learning to live with our environment. These stories gave us courage as we journey through this life and hope for the next. Yanakanay, this Easter, I invite you with us on the journey.
The Uniting Church has accepted that the Holy Spirit was present in this land, nurturing and sustaining First Peoples and revealing God to them through law, custom and ceremony before the arrival of the missionaries. Sovereignty and what that means for us as a church is an issue we're committed to exploring with our brothers and sisters in Christ. This is a conversation about renewed hope for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, indeed for our nation. That's why we think it's an important conversation for all Australians to engage in.
And that was Stuart McMillan with the Uniting Church's Easter message for 2016. And as he said, it's time to start having a conversation in Australia about relationships with Indigenous people and reconciliation within that, within Australia. And it's only the beginning, and it's something that, as you know, we think in the Spirit Land, or at least I think, that Australia really has been taking its very long time coming to this, and it's not something that we can cover in, you know, even in an hour, even if we even in a week, but it's something that we are going to be looking at in this country for many years to come.
I think you're right, Claudine, and it's been a long journey. I think if I go back to when I was at primary school, we didn't do anything. We learnt the First Fleet. Now, admittedly, I was at primary school in 88, which was a lot about post-colonisation Australia. It was a big to-do. So
the bicentenary.
Bicentenary. So we didn't. So I can't remember anything about Aboriginal history at primary school. I then went to a fairly conservative secondary school, so we just certainly didn't do anything about that. We would have more learnt European history. But then when I went to university, I can remember my first real in an academic sense of actually learning a little bit about Aboriginal cultures and societies, which was a real eye-opener for me. So it's kind of that. So I think we're, as you say, we've started the journey, but we've got a long, long way to go. And it's quite embarrassing, I think, that neither of us really can have a great grasp of of Aboriginal spirituality and cultures. We just don't get it. So Australia is on the journey, but we've got a long, long way to go.
And I think it's also, I mean, for me at least, it's also, I don't want to speak for people that I don't represent. I don't want to talk about things that I don't fully understand. So it's, for me, it's, I want to learn a lot more before I feel confident to talk about these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much to learn, and we're only just on the way. I think I know probably enough to know not what I don't know. I think I'm that far along the journey, so, which is kind of a scary point, but hopefully as I go along in life, I'll learn more and more.
You're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and it's NAIDOC Week, when Australians come together to celebrate and learn about Indigenous culture and history. And that song was from Little Things, Big Things Grow, written by Kev Carmody and Paul Kelly. And it was recorded by Paul Kelly and the Messengers in 1991, which is probably the more famous version. And this version by Carmody and Kelly was recorded in 1993. And it describes a strike by Gurindji workers led by Vincent Liari at Wave Hill Cattle Station in the Northern Territory, which began in 1966. The strike lasted 9 years and drew the country's attention to the injustice faced by Indigenous workers. And in those 9 years, the country saw the 1967 referendum, in which the Australian people decided to acknowledge the...
Well, Aboriginal people were given the right to vote.
Was that the actual question, or it's...
My understanding, and now I might be terribly wrong, so someone at home might be able to text in and correct us on this. If you know the answer, do text in to 0427JOY949. But my understanding is that prior to 67, Aboriginal people were classified as fauna in Australia. So therefore, they were actually the equivalent of a kangaroo.
Yeah. So they weren't recognised as people.
People.
And
which is
therefore convert or...
Horrendous. So therefore, they weren't able to vote, but they wouldn't have been able to own land. And I wonder whether they were technically owned by the government, which is just, by modern standards, is appalling.
It's hard to imagine, but it's only 50 years ago.
Yeah, and that's scary.
Yeah. So around the same time, it also led to the Woodward Royal Commission into land rights and the Gove land rights case, which I think basically... supported the concept of terra nullius, which was finally overturned by the Mabo case in 1992. So the Gurindji strike ended in 1975 when the Prime Minister, Gough Whitlam, returned some of the land to the Gurindji people and symbolically poured earth into Vincent Lingari's hand. And this version from Kev Carmody's album Bloodlines also features Titus on background vocals, so it all comes together.
It does very nicely. But it's that gesture by Gough Whitlam is quite. It was a huge moment in terms of Australia starting the step to go forward in terms of looking at what we've done as a past and basically the foundations of what this country's built on, which was terra nullius, and actually saying, well, that's not an accurate view. That was a legal concept that was constructed to enable colonisation, and it started to, that's starting to turn, and actually for us as a nation to go, we are home to the oldest continuous living culture in the world, and it's the acts of our ancestors in the last 200 plus years, whatever we're up to now, 220 years, whatever it is, that almost destroyed that culture. You know, we talked a little while ago, we had a track by Archie Roach, who was a member of the Stolen Generation, and as Claudine said, he was born at Murupna. Now, for Murupna is home of the Rumbalara Mission. And if you go up to Rumbalara, is still exists as an organisation. If you go up to Rumbalara now, there's a museum that talks about the history of the Rumbalara Mission and how they were camped by a river, and then they thought this is not the right way to do it, and they upped camp and moved, and then the government went and built these hideous concrete boxes basically, and they waited something like 7 years for a bathroom to be built. It's really quite confronting, and this is not that long ago. They also talk about when the Queen visited Australia. Now, I believe that's in the 50s, maybe the 60s, how they were camped along a river which could be seen. Their camp could be seen from the road the Queen was going to go along, and so they were forcibly moved. So the Queen couldn't see this camp. It's horrific. So you've got that sort of side of the spectrum, whereas you have my manager at my job, she grew up for her very formative years as the daughter of a Wesleyan minister working on an island off the Northern Territory coast. That community feels so enriched by what her father did that there's a street in Canberra, in the part of Canberra that is named after important Aboriginal people, that's called Alamore Lane, and that's named after her father. So you've got both ends of the spectrum, and certainly the Christian churches in these two examples being part of that journey, and quite different ends of the spectrums in terms of how it's perceived by the Aboriginal people.
Yeah, and it's certainly, as we said, there are many Indigenous people who have embraced Christianity and acknowledge that it has it's a mixed history. It's brought good things as well as bad, and so that's part of the their story and the story of this country.
That's right. It's part of the rich history of who we are, and it's something that we will learn to acknowledge as we go forward. And you've been listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We've been talking about NAIDOC Week, which is this week, and it's celebrating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture and giving us all an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and spirituality is all about. So it's certainly a great week to get out there and find out what's out. You can jump on their website, and there is some events that will be coming up, and the website is www.naidoc.org.au. But you've been listening to The Spirit Lounge with Mark and
Claudine.
First night back, so it's been great to have Claudine on board.
Thank you. No Rachel this week. We'll get together all together at some point.
We will. We'll get the whole of us here together. So thank you for joining us on The Spirit Lounge tonight. Coming up, we've got the Bears in the Woods, and they'll have certainly a very interesting show this evening for you to listen to. But you've been listening to Claudine and Mark on The Spirit Lounge.
And we'll be finishing off with friend of Joy, Jessica Morboy, who was born in Darwin of Kukuyalanji and Indonesian ancestry.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.